And now, a page from the diary of Flo.
Dear diary, I got the brush off again. I don't get it. Is there something wrong with the way I wave? Elbow wrist. Why won't that little basset hound acknowledge me? I'm friendly. I give everyone peace of mind when I protect their homes through Progressive. He should be jumping for joy when I walk by.
Save an average of 17% on car insurance when you bundle home and auto through Progressive.
Maybe it's me. No, it's him.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. In a second, we're going to be joined by a very special guest. But before we get to that, make sure you're finding all of our shows on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Today's Fast Break. And make sure, actually, today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers to get your $20 rebate. Again, we're just handing out money. The money is coming out of not our pockets, but SeatGeek's pockets, and we are responsible for that to a certain extent. This is going in a direction that we really shouldn't be going in.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to check with the lawyers there.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're joined by a very special guest today.
Incredibly special guest. John Ireland is going to join us here in a second. Usually here with a guest, we would, you know, go through today's news and all that. But honestly, the show is way too good.
There was no news today.
And
I'm Harrison Fagan, by the way, because Anthony never introduces me.
Well, I was going to get to that in a second.
All right.
You think you're the special guest. Okay.
No, I didn't say that.
But you know John Ireland from the voice of the radio voice of the Lakers. He does that for ESPN. He also does ESPN's Mason and Ireland show that is hugely popular. Great show there. Formerly, you know him of KCAL 9 doing their sideline reporting there.
He has a pretty good story for you guys coming up about that.
It's at the very end of the show, so make sure you guys stick around for that. And lastly, you also know him from his work with Spectrum Sportsnet as well, doing their pre- and post-game, you know, little reports on video. So, great, great, great guest. And again, today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers to get your $20 rebate. Let's get you to John. So, just in general, the positivity that's kind of surrounding the Lakers right now is incredible to watch from afar, but you've been associated with the team for quite some time now. And the question is, from your experience and what you're watching with the Lakers right now, heading off to training camp, media day, all that, the positivity that's coming around, do you feel like is it different this year than prior years, or are you reading into it any differently than just the kids are really excited to get out and do their thing?
Well, I'll answer your first question first. It's way different from other years, because even when the Lakers didn't look like they were loaded, and remember, it was just 3 years ago that we had Pau Gasol, Dwight Howard, Steve Nash, and Kobe all on opening night. As long as Kobe was on the team, you had it in the back of your mind that, well, maybe if Kobe can get back to being Kobe, they could get into the playoffs and put a scare in somebody. Now, it turned out, you know, they've had three losing seasons in a row, so it turned out not to be true. But Kobe gave you hope. What's different about this year is that the West is so loaded, and in particular, Golden State is so loaded, that no one has any illusions of the Lakers competing for a title this year. And with Kobe leaving, I think everybody's really anxious to see who takes over as the leader, who takes the ball, who's going to be the go-to guy when games are on the line. So it's a completely different feeling than it's been in the past 3 years. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and actually, to build on that, it's kind of interesting because when the playoff talk was going on the last few years, I mean, I couldn't help but, I wouldn't say roll my eyes, but it was like, come on, guys. You see the other teams that they're going to be competing against. But this year, there is no, you know, there is no blurred reality that might get people to think, yeah, maybe they can squeak in, but it's perfectly fine. You know, whereas the last few years, I don't think if somebody were to say that their expectations weren't playoffs, that it wouldn't be okay. And it's kind of exciting that the reality is okay for right now.
Right. Well, even somebody like me who works for the team, I would never have been comfortable as long as Kobe was on the team saying that this team has no chance to make the playoffs. Even though we all kind of privately thought it, we would never publicly say it. But right now, what we're selling is hope.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying, you know, you've got these guys, and let's be honest about what we're talking about here. What the Lakers really need is they need one of these four young guys to pop, to turn into a star. A good example of this would be, for example, Portland. Portland kind of has been drafting a lot of young guys, and what they needed was one of them or two of them to pop. And now Damian Lillard popped. He's going to be an all-star for a long time. And it looks like they may have another one in C.J. McCollum. If you compare that to somebody like Boston, who's been drafting young players for years and years, no one's ever popped. They don't have any stars. Or maybe Utah. They keep looking for a star. They can't get one. What the Lakers need is they need Russell, Randall, Ingram, or Clarkson to jump to the next level and become a star. And that's what we're all watching. We're hopeful that maybe one of these young guys can be like, you know, people forget Harrison and Anthony. When Kobe was a rookie, he wasn't very good. You know, he didn't play very much. He was playing behind Eddie Jones and Nick Van Exel. But we all knew, those of us who covered the team and watched him in practice went, oh, my gosh, in 1 to 2 years, he's gonna boot one of those guys out. So that's what you're hoping to see this year with one of these four young guys, with Russell, Randall, Ingram, or Clarkson, that, oh, that guy's jumped a level. He can go toe-to-toe with Russell Westbrook or Chris Paul or Damian Lillard, and now we maybe have a star that we can build around and maybe help us attract free agents. So it's a completely different thing we're rooting for, when in past years we'd be rooting simply to get best playoff position and how far can we go. This year it's all different.
Yeah, and so I kind of wanted to ask you, I think Anthony and I have talked a lot about this year, which one of these guys we think is kind of most due to pop, or in the best situation to pop, like you're talking about. And I think we're kind of in agreement that we think that this team is pretty much set up for Russell to have his breakout year. But I'm curious for your thoughts on if you agree with us, or is there a different young guy that maybe you're a little bit more partial to his game, or you think he has kind of a better chance of breaking out, or that people should be on the lookout for?
I tend to agree with you guys. I think Russell probably would be the biggest chance to become a star of those four, but we don't know what Ingram is. You know, he hasn't played long enough, and we don't know if he's, you know, if he's Kevin Durant, if he's Tayshaun Prince, or if he's not even up to that level. Russell is interesting. I have this debate all the time with Mike Trudell. Trudell is absolutely convinced that Russell is going to be a multi-time all-star in this league. Michael Thompson and I tend to look at Russell as more of a Mike Conley, somebody that's going to be really reliable, really solid, but Mike Conley's never been an all-star. Part of the reason is he plays in the West and he's sitting behind Tony Parker and Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook and Steph Curry, but I'm wondering if Russell has it in him to be Westbrook or Lillard or Curry. That's the question this year. So I'm really hoping Trudell is right. The question with D'Angelo is going to be, we know he can pass. We know he can score. Can he defend these other elite point guards? And is he fast enough when the other team, let's say he does turn this corner that we're all hoping he turns. Is he fast enough? Does he have another gear that he can go to when the other team's best defender starts taking him every night? Because if it plays out the way you're suggesting, that means if Russell becomes clear-cut the best player on our team, that means all of a sudden the other team's best wing is going to guard him every night. He's going to be going up against Klay Thompson every night. He's going to be going up against Chris Paul every night. You know, he's going to be going, LeBron would slide over and take him in a game against Cleveland. So can Russell handle that type of scrutiny? And to be dead honest with you guys, I don't know, but I think it's going to be really fun to watch and find out.
Boy, that sounds terrifying. When you say, like, LeBron has to slide over and he has to deal with him, that's terrifying.
Right.
All of a sudden, that breakout looks less likely.
if you watch, let's say, Cleveland play San Antonio, and Kawhi starts to take over the game, LeBron slides over and guards Kawhi. Mm-hmm. If you see, when Derrick Rose was at the height of his powers in Chicago, mm-hmm. and the Bulls had Tom Thibodeau, and they were getting the one or the two seed in the East, in those playoff series, LeBron would slide over and guard Derrick Rose. If you're D'Angelo Russell, that's what you want. The ultimate sign of respect, that the other team would take their best defender and say, okay, we got to lock him up. And then can you still impact the game? Can you still score? Can you still create points when you have that other team's defender? And by the way, this year for the Lakers, we have Luol Deng, who's one of those guys defensively. He's older. He's, I think, 32 or 33 now, but he's going to now draw the other team's hot player. So if Klay Thompson or Kawhi Leonard or LeBron is lighting us up, Luol Deng will be the guy who gets assigned to him defensively.
Great stuff so far from John Ireland. Just really quickly, we want to take a quick break, and we're going to send you back to John and the rest of the show. But before we do that, we want to talk about SeatGeek really, really quickly. They're kind enough to sponsor the show, and they've given us a lot of great support thus far. And we wanted to return the favor, and we want to, give you guys a favor, do a favor for you guys. So make sure you guys are using the promo code LOLAKERS to get your $20 rebate. SeatGeek has a ton of stuff to offer. There's their deal raider, where they tell you what kind of deal you're getting. Is it an efficient purchase? Not having to print out tickets. You can buy your ticket on your way to the stadium, walk into the stadium. They can scan your barcode, and you're in the game. And if you're using the promo code, you get there, you get your email, you get your rebate, you get your beer, your peanuts, your hat that you and it's probably like half
like
a hat that you're
during the whole summer we were having to tell you guys like check out a Dodger game, but now we're back to Lakers. We can tell
right.
you guys can use this promo code if you haven't used it yet, if you for your first SeatGeek purchase to get a $20 rebate on your Lakers preseason tickets or your Lakers regular season tickets, and mm-hmm. you can go ahead and get those now because we're back to the season. It's time for basketball.
Absolutely. So there are plenty of options out there. Rams games as well. There are plenty of options to be able to go to watch and use this promo code. Make sure you're using it. And let's go ahead and get back to the show because John's that good. So while we're on the topic of Russell, the other criticism has been about his demeanor, his interaction with his teammates and stuff like that. And I don't know, from what we saw out there in Vegas, it seemed to me like they got along perfectly fine. Do you think that was overblown because of just the narrative that might have gotten out of control last season?
Well, I'll tell you this. I'm around that team all the time. I travel with them during the season. I'm in their hotels. I'm on their bus. Russell doesn't have the issues that you're talking about. The Nick Young thing, and when that story broke at the end of the year, was obviously not good, and it was a very bad look for Russell. But to be candid, I mean, you guys are young. People your age and people their age put everything on tape now. You guys record everything with your phones, so it's kind of a sign of the times that something ugly like that could happen. I don't think D'Angelo Russell has any problem with any of his teammates, and by the way, I'm including Nick in that. I think that those guys have kind of made up and they're moving forward. I don't know if Nick's going to be on the roster opening night at Media Day. They were telling us it appears like he is. But at the same time, I don't think that D'Angelo Russell has any issues getting along with anyone else in that locker room. And I'm around him all the time.
Hey, John, just real quick, since people our age do record everything with our phones, we thought we should let you know at this point we are recording this interview. We just wanted to.
I figured as much.
Yeah,
but that's okay. This is an approved recording, unlike what D'Angelo did with Nick, which was an unapproved recording. So there's the difference.
All right. Well, I'm glad we're in the clear there. We just wanted to make sure.
So
sure.
So. Like you said, you spoke about how you've been around this team. You travel with this team a bunch, and then you've been with the Lakers now for quite some time. I actually think there's a great comparison between this team and that Nick Van Exel, the Eddie Jones, the Anthony Peeler, Sedale 3 era of the Lakers, and this team, where both teams are in the rebuild. That team was a little further ahead because that was still a playoff contender. But do you see the similarities there between that one and this team?
Not as much as you do, only because that team was better. I mean, that team was definitely a playoff team. Even before we got Shaq as a free agent, that team, I think, was the 18 one year, took Phoenix to the max 5 games. This team is not that.
Mm-hmm.
This team is doesn't have – some of those guys were in their fifth so, – you know, remember, Nick Van Exel was a guy that had 3 or 4 years' experience, and same thing with Eddie Jones before they finally got good. Russell's going to be in his second year. Ingram's going to be in his first year. Basically, Randall's in his second year because he broke his leg. So this team's younger than that team. But other than that, I can see what you're saying, that they're young, unproven, trying to see if they can become stars. But this team is a generation younger than that team was.
That's fair.
Yeah, and so we've talked a lot about how, you know, you started out with the team and they were pretty great, and then they were pretty consistently good until these last couple years when they went to the lottery 3 straight times. And I guess I wanted to ask you if you foresee the team, since again, like we're predicting, they aren't going to be very good this year. They're going to be a little bit more exciting. But do you think that the team is going to have the patience to kind of stick with this rebuild? Or do you think that they're going to end up trading one of these guys? And I guess I also would like to know, what would you do? Like, if it was you calling the shots, do you think that you would stay patient? Or do you think that, maybe you move one of these guys for a star if you can, or a package of these guys?
I would love to answer your question with specifics, but the honest answer is it depends what the deal is. I often say on my show that if Russell Westbrook or DeMarcus Cousins hits the open market, that I would do everything in my power to get them. The NBA, there's one thing we can tell guys, if you go back to when Magic Johnson and Larry Bird used to meet in the finals, right, so this is the start of the 1980s, there is one team, the 2004 Detroit Pistons, who won a championship without a megastar, a surefire Hall of Famer. You can have a lot of good parts, but you better have an aircraft carrier. You better have a star if you're going to win an NBA title. So I would not hesitate to trade anybody on our roster if you could get a first-team All-NBA type player like Westbrook or like Cousins. But right now, there's nobody in the market. It looked like for a while Westbrook was going to be. You remember after Durant signed with the Warriors, every story on every website was, well, now they have to trade Westbrook. They can't let him walk away. Well, Westbrook instead decided to sign a 2-year extension, and now he's all set. So you've got to keep your eyes open at all times. But you also have to assume that no other team is going to want to get rid of one of those guys. So you got to be ready to play in both lanes. You got to be ready to say, okay, let's develop these young guys in hopes one of them turns into a star. But if a big star happens to become available, like Kareem did, like Shaq did, like, you know, they moved a lot of pieces around to get Kobe and draft Kobe. If that situation presents itself, you can't be afraid to pull the trigger. And that's what I would do. I would stay on the phone with Sacramento. I would stay on the phone with Oklahoma City, and I would monitor those situations. But I think, you know, good executives, and Mitch Kupchak's been doing this for a while, are going to sit there and say, okay, let's keep that on the back burner. Let's pretend for our sake that none of those players become available and develop these guys and see if we can hit with one of them.
I guess my question is, at what point do you draw the line, right? Where, because, I mean, eventually the hope is that Russell is going to show himself to become, you know, that he is going to make it work and that he is at the very least going to be, you know, Conley, right? That would be the hope. If he doesn't, then all bets are off. But
right,
if he does start to take major strides forward this year, and then all of a sudden, then Sacramento comes calling, is like, hey, you know, Russell's looked really good this year. Boogie for Russell, maybe, you know, a pick or whatever, we'll make the deal work. I guess I don't know if I'd be very comfortable offering up the future if Russell takes those steps forward for Boogie in that situation. Or am I being too protective of the piece?
Well, you are right now, because D'Angelo, as much as we're all rooting for him to do that, mm-hmm. We can only deal in space and time. So right. I guess let me flip it on you. If you got that call today, would you do it?
I'm not as high on Boogie as many people are.
If it was straight up,
yeah,
if it was one for one, I think you have to. But where I'd worry is if you're trading, you know, if they want Russell and Ingram and, say, Randall for DeMarcus Cousins. And then it's kind of, you're getting into iffy territory where I think you're relying on your cap space again and hoping that DeMarcus is good enough to bring in free agents because, you know, Cousins by himself, I think my issue would be is that he hasn't led the Kings to the playoffs on his own over the last couple of years. So if you're putting him on a roster that's kind of gutted, then I think that would be my worry if you're trading a bunch of the younger pieces for him.
Right. So, you can only deal with what's in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
If they ask for too much, and I would imagine they would, then you have to weigh that. But I'm one that, and you know, I'm not always right, but I'm always one that would trade unproven for proven. And again, the NBA is rare. The NBA, I have a friend of mine that always says, if you want to evaluate an NBA trade, look at the team that got the best player in the deal, and that's who won the trade. Well, even in that scenario, Russell plus two other pieces, the best player in the trade is Boogie. So, I mean, I would consider anything, but I'll get back to the original point I made.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't get at least one star and probably two, you're not winning the title. Every bit of evidence we have indicates that. I mean, go back to the Magic Johnson 1979-80 Lakers with Magic and Kareem. Every year since then, there has been a giant star, a superstar, and usually one to go with them if you're going to win the title. The one exception was the year that Karl Malone got hurt and Gary Payton got hurt and the Lakers lost to the Pistons. But in probably 29 of the last, or I would say 34 of the last 35 years, if you're going to win the title, you better get a star player. And right now, as we sit here talking about it, the Lakers don't have one.
Right.
So I think you got to weigh everything against that. Now, if you guys want to make the argument, don't empty the cupboard for a guy who's not very reliable like Boogie, I'll agree with you. But if you can get him, I don't think you hang up the phone until you explore all those options.
Right.
I'm more apt to follow that rule that somehow by hook or by crook. And look, and guys, I would ask you to look around the league. Again, I mentioned Boston, I mentioned Utah, Milwaukee. There's a whole bunch of franchises that have no shot to win the title because they can't get a star. We live in Los Angeles. Chances are we probably can attract a star, but right now we don't have one. And so that's a big puzzle the Lakers need to solve.
Well, so that's definitely true, and they don't have that star for now. But I guess as far as the current state of the team, though, the last thing we wanted to ask you was what the Lakers do have rather than a star is they seem to have a really positive atmosphere right now. All of the stuff kind of coming out of training camp and, you know, they're playing music at the practices and everybody's giving glowing quotes about each other. And I guess I was curious if you thought, do you get the sense that this is just kind of the standard off-season optimism? Everybody's undefeated right now and, you know, everybody thinks that everyone's going to kind of work out. Or does this feel different than your kind of standard August optimism, I guess?
Well, it feels different because what we're optimistic about is not the fact that we could win a title. It's that we have a rebirth. We're going in the right direction. I think they hired the right coach. I think Luke Walton is perfect for building this from the ground up. I think we've got a lot of young, exciting parts that are not going to be, for lack of a better term, buried behind Kobe. I think last year a lot of those guys didn't feel comfortable standing up and taking a leadership role because it was Kobe's team and Byron enabled it to be Kobe's team. This year, I think that somebody's going to have to step forward and be a leader. Somebody's going to have to step forward and be a defensive stopper. Everything's new. It's like I would equate it to getting a brand new house in a really nice neighborhood. And so the Lakers have that. There's a lot of work to be done, but it's really exciting. The possibilities are endless. And, you know, I always look at my job as I'm really spoiled. I honestly would not trade my job for anyone else in the league. I'm calling the team that I grew up rooting for in the city that I grew up in. And I really look forward to going to the arena every night. And for some reason, and I'm probably not articulating it very well, but for some reason, I have a ton of enthusiasm about this group. I want to see if it can come together. I want to see what Luke's going to take from Golden State and what he's going to take from when he played for Phil Jackson and how he's going to put that puzzle all together. And most of all, I want the answers to the questions. Is one of these guys, or maybe more than one, going to pop? Let me ask you, do you two guys think that one of these guys is going to pop?
I have faith in Russell, but I was just asked this question today for Silver Screen and Roll. I did the Facebook Live there this morning, and they asked me, you know, who of the young guys do I have the most high hopes for? But with Ingram, I would make the argument that the small forward position is the most important position in the NBA right now because of the shots that they have to take, the guys they have to guard, and all of that stuff. And if Ingram is, you know, star quality at that position, the Lakers are set for quite some time, especially with his body type. He could hypothetically guard 1 through 4, you know, 1 through 5 if he puts a lot more bulk on him. And if he's able to do that and combine that with even decent offense, then he becomes a superstar.
Right. Well, and you know, one guy that I think is going to be fun to keep an eye on is Randall, because he's trying to answer a question that I don't know the answer to, and that is, can you learn how to shoot once you reach the NBA? In other words, he's so freakishly athletic and talented that by the time he gets, you know, into a game now with his fully developed skill set, he can rebound with anybody. He can pass with anybody. He's really fast. He can run with anybody. The one thing he's never been able to do is hit an outside shot. But everybody I talked to over there says he's shooting 1,000 jumpers a day. He's working at it relentlessly. And I talked to somebody the day that knew Charles Barkley when he was young and said Barkley came into the league like that. That Barkley had this raw power and skill that nobody could contain, but he couldn't shoot. He turned himself into a good shooter, and you know, that turned him into a Hall of Famer. So Randall is a really curious study for me. I think his ceiling is Barkley, like that he could find a way to learn how to shoot, and all of a sudden we've got this secret weapon. And I think his floor is, do you guys remember Anthony Mason? Or are you too young for that?
Nope, I remember Mason.
Anthony Mason was this left-handed whirling dervish who played for the Knicks, who was really strong and really powerful, and was a really good player for them for 10 years. I think Randall's going to be somewhere in that spectrum, so I'm really curious where he's going to end up too.
He was terrifying. I remember Mason watching those old Knicks games, and he would just, like, people just bounced off of him like some kind of
wrecking ball. Randall too.
Yeah,
that's Randall, and you know, Randall's going to be able to rebound like Mason used to rebound too. I think Julius is going to be a double-double guy for the foreseeable future. The question is the other team going to need to guard him? If you can't shoot outside, you just back off him and pack the paint. And that's what teams did on him last year. But let's see if he, you know, he's working on that shot. Let's see if he can, you know, add it to his game and make a difference.
Have you bought into the Larry Nance Jr. hype? Because there's been, I don't know if you follow on social media, but among all the, you know, the bloggers with like 1,000 followers or whatever, there's been a whole bunch of conversation about, like, well, is Larry Nance a better fit for the starting five, or is Randall, do you just try to make that work, and this and that and the other? Have you bought into what Larry Nance Jr. might bring to the table?
Yeah, I love his athleticism, and plus he's just a great dude. His issue is going to be, can he stay healthy?
Mm-hmm.
He's one of these guys that is kind of bouncing off the walls all the time, and you know, he's not going to slow down. He's going to be flying in, trying to block shots and grab rebounds and do high-flying dunks. His game depends on his athleticism. If he can stay healthy, I think he can be a very important piece for the Lakers. I don't know if he'll start, but I think he could be a critical piece coming off the bench, a lot like Michael Cooper was in the 80s, or if you remember those Phoenix teams in the 90s, he could be kind of like a Dan Marley type player. I think the Lakers stole Larry Nance. A lot of teams thought the Lakers were reaching on that pick, and I actually think the opposite. I actually think that if you did that draft again, he would go higher.
Absolutely.
Yeah, from what we've seen, he definitely would have went higher. But I'll fess up. I was one of the guys on draft night that was kind of, I don't watch a ton of college basketball, so I'm hardly a draft Nick. But I saw everyone on my timeline reacting like, wait, who? Who's this guy? And then he just burst onto the scene last year at Summer League and really hasn't looked back. He's been a really pleasant surprise.
Well, and on top of that, guys, he's the type of guy that you want on your team. Mm-hmm. He's a really good teammate. He's a smart player. He reminds me in a lot of ways, he's more athletic, but he reminds me in a lot of ways of when the Lakers drafted Luke in the early 2000s. Luke was like this really smart, cerebral player who Phil Jackson loved because he didn't do stupid things, and he normally would make the right pass, and he'd be in games, and he'd really make a difference. That's kind of how Nance, and the fact that Luke is the coach, I'm sure he's going to recognize that. Again, my big worry with Nance is that he's so athletic that he's going to, exactly what happened in Summer League.
Yeah,
he's going to try and make some ridiculous circus play and then land up with a busted wrist. But if he can stay healthy, I think he's going to have a really good year.
All right, so we're going to segue awkwardly to some of your history, because like you said, you grew up in LA, you rooted for the Lakers growing up, you went to UCLA and all of that stuff. And Vince Scully is retiring this year, and Joe Davis has to step into those shoes somehow. And from your standpoint, now Spiro Dedis followed immediately. He was the guy between you and Chick, but I can't imagine that shadow just disappears at all. So I guess my question would be, if you had any advice to Joe on how to handle that situation, how to try to carve out your own niche there, what would you say to Joe about following somebody incredible like Vin, or in your case, it was Chick?
Well, what's funny is that you're talking about Chick's shadow and how big that shadow cast. Spiro was actually the third guy to do radio after Chick, and I'm the fourth. So I'm four people, but you don't remember that because Chick is such a big deal here and so much a part of the fact. What happened was Paul Sunderland took over for Chick, and for a year or two, they continued with the old simulcast.
Mm-hmm.
And so Paul was the first one to replace Chick. And then Joel Myers actually did the radio for 5 years. When Paul slid over and did the TV, that's when they ended the simulcast.
That's right. There you go.
So then Joel took over the TV, and they brought in Spiro. And Spiro did 5 years. And now they've brought me in, and this will be the start of my sixth year. So we're actually, Chick's last year was 2002. And here we are in 2016, but we all, especially Bill McDonald and I, all look at that as Chick's chair, mm-hmm. and we'll never look at it any differently. All of us could work, like Joel or Paul or Spiro or I, could have a 25-year run, and it would still pale in comparison to Chick. We would never even get close to him. And so what I would say to Joe or to anybody else, and I've had this conversation with Charlie, with Charlie Steiner, and he's been really smart about it. If you have an icon, a broadcast legend, in that chair, what you want to do is run towards him, not away from him. You want to. I talk about Chick almost every broadcast,
mm-hmm.
and I encourage like young kids who've never heard Chick to go on YouTube and type Chick Hearn into the window. I always refer to him as the greatest announcer who ever lived, the best basketball announcer who ever did the game. And I'll say to Michael in the middle, Chick would say he's doing the bunny hat in the pea patch, or Chick would, so what I would do is don't try and run away from Vin Scully or Chick Hearn or any of those guys. What you want to do is run towards them and celebrate how lucky you are to get to sit in their chair. Cause and Billy and I talk about this a lot. We're just keeping the chair warm. And it's an honor to do that.
Yeah, it is kind of funny. I'll listen to some of your radio broadcasts, and you have to remind people, like when you put the game in the refrigerator, I've heard it a couple times, and you'll have to ask, for those of you listening, I hope you know what I'm talking about, but then you'll put the game in the refrigerator, And it's beyond me that there are Laker fans out there who don't know what you're talking about. That's insane to me.
Well, think about this. Let's say that you were born in the year 2000, all right?
Mm-hmm.
That means you're 16 years old this year, and you never heard Chick do a game. You were two when he did his last game. And so a lot of people don't know what that is. I Michael and I have talked about bringing back, and I think I'm going to do it. I want to get permission from Shannon, Chick's granddaughter. I mentioned it to Marge, his wife, and she was all for it. But I don't want to do it until the Lakers get good again.
Hmm.
But I want to get the actual clip of Chick saying, "Ladies and gentlemen, this game's in the refrigerator. The door's closed, the lights are out, the butter's getting hard, the Jell-O's jiggling," and actually play that when we think the Lakers have the game won. But I don't want to do it in a 17-win year, and I don't want it to be corny or goofy. I want it to honor Chick and be a cool thing that Laker fans look forward to. So if and when the Lakers get good again, I'm going to try and find a way to work that in.
Well, with that being said, you know, like when you're not grabbing Chick's calls and throw, which like I think both Anthony and I just both got literal goosebumps as you were doing, because that was just thinking about how awesome that would be if you brought that back and threw it into the radio broadcast.
I taught my wife word for word that call. That was one of the things that we're teaching my kids too down the road.
So I'll give you a good thing about that call. The line.
Breaking up.
You guys ever heard this story?
We lost you for a second. We lost you for just a second.
Okay,
right as you were starting to tell us.
You got me now?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the Jell-O's jiggling was an addition from James Worthy's mom in Gastonia, North Carolina. One year when the Lakers were back there playing, Worthy's mom had everybody over to her house. And she made everybody dinner. And Chick was at the dinner, and she said, "What's that thing you do?" And he said, "You mean the door's closed, the lights are out, the butter's getting hard, and the game's in the refrigerator?" And she was, "Yeah, yeah, you should add the Jell-O's jiggling. I know my Jell-O is done when I open the fridge and I see it start to move, to jiggle." And so he added Jell-O's jiggling in honor of James Worthy's mom, which Worthy, by the way, takes as a huge compliment.
Yeah.
He brought that to the Laker culture, and then his name, Big Game James, was also given to him by Chick after James had that monster game in Game 7 of the 88 Finals when
triple
the Lakers
double.
Beat the Pistons to win the title.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but the Chick Hearn call, that part of the call, Jell-O's jiggling, came from James Worthy's mom.
That's incredible.
That's really awesome. So when you're calling the I was watching Backstage Lakers this morning, and I heard your call on D'Angelo Russell's game winner at Summer League for the first time, because I was at that game, so I didn't hear it, you know, when you originally did it, but I heard it this morning, and it made me wonder, what are you thinking going into a moment like that where it's a buzzer beater situation? Are you thinking through your, I've always been interested if you're thinking through potential calls in your head beforehand, or does it just kind of come to you as the moment's going on? Are you thinking about like, oh, okay, so this guy might get the ball, this is what I might yell? Or is it just kind of a feel thing in the moment?
It's to answer your question, it's a feel thing in the moment, but what I'm thinking about, I'm a radio announcer first. That was a call I did on TV.
Oh, my bad.
We were advising the Summer League games. But I still called those TV games like I was doing radio, because what Chick told me before he died was that I have to remember that my primary person that I'm taking care of is the guy stuck on the freeway who can't get home to watch the game on TV. I'm his lifeline to what's happening inside the arena. So the number one thing I'm keeping an eye on, I already know the score. I'm keeping an eye on the clock. You want to determine whether or not the shot is for the win. Is it for the tie? Is there going to be any time left after it goes through? And then you can realize and play it out in your own head, is this a game winner? You'll hear a lot of times, if like in that case, D'Angelo had literally less than a second. And I said, Russell, for the win, because there's no way. And so you want to let that guy in the car know, okay, you're telling a story. So is it possible that even if the shot goes in, that the Sixers would have a chance to come back on the other end? So that's kind of the two things you're thinking about are time and score. And if you get around that, then you just make everything else up in the moment.
Yeah, that was I remember the call, and I mean we happened to be at the game, but then you kind of go back and you listen to the stuff, and yeah, when calling it for the win while the ball is in the air. And I don't know, from your angle, were you sitting at the table, or were you raised at all?
Are you talking about the game in Vegas?
Actually, you called that remotely. Do I have that right?
We did. We called it from the studio in El Segundo. Mm-hmm. There was a legal issue with the Lakers, and ESPN owned all the broadcast rights to the Samsung Summer League.
Mm-hmm.
So we were not allowed to take our trucks in there. But because the Laker Network wants to televise every single Laker game, we cut a deal with ESPN. We paid them to take their feed,
mm-hmm.
and then we just called it with James and I in the studio.
Right. So from the angle that you had, were you able to see that the ball was going in?
No, I had no idea.
We had a pretty good angle, and when he released it, you just kind of, oh my gosh, you know that feeling where the ball's released, and you're just like, wow, that might actually have a chance.
Yeah, and he used to do that. When I say he, I'm talking about Kobe. Kobe used to do that a lot. Like he would get a shot, and he, in his own head, he would say, "I got to get to a certain spot." And if he could get to that spot, he would be all set.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of times, more times than not, actually, it would go in. I think Kobe had probably 20 or 30 game winners just by getting to that spot.
Perfect. All right, so we're gonna go ahead and wrap up. We have a couple minutes left over here, and like we've built on throughout the show, you've had such a great run with the Lakers, and we're going to play a little story time here, quick hits. You just talked about Kobe's, you know, ability to make those game winners. Do you have a go-to Kobe story?
I've got a bunch of them, but the most amazing Kobe performance I ever saw was the last game of the regular season in Portland, 2004. Type that into YouTube, Kobe Blazers buzzer beaters. He hit two shots.
Two of them, yeah.
One to tie the game at the end of regulation, and the other one to win the game in overtime. And I was the sideline reporter for that game, so I was sitting on the court for both of them. And it was surreal. He was perfectly guarded on both shots, and it didn't matter. And it happened to be on the last game of the regular season, and it moved the Lakers' seating up. But he hit more important shots than that. Obviously, he had a bigger night than that when he had 81. That, to me, was the most impressive, ridiculous Kobe Bryant night I've ever seen.
All right, so that Blazers game, I have Blazers friends, and they're still angry about that game. All right, so we gave a Kobe story. Do you have time for a Shaq story, too, seeing as he just retired, or?
Sure, yeah. Well, it depends. I mean, I'll tell you the one that that probably most people attribute me to, and that was in the same season, that 2004 season, a little bit earlier, the 2004 Super Bowl was on a Sunday. We played the Raptors in Toronto. And I think you guys know this, but if you're a sideline reporter, you only get to talk to a guest if your team wins. So if the Lakers don't win, I don't do an on-the-court post-game interview. I just go to the locker room and, you know, deal with the people after that. But in this game, it was really chippy, and the refs weren't calling any fouls. It was going back and forth. And on the last play, Vince Carter ran down, threw up a shot. He thought he got fouled. The refs didn't call it, and the Lakers won by 1 point. So I walk out onto the court, and I grab Shaq. And I see something along the lines of, Shaq, this was a hard-fought game with a lot of fouls down the stretch, but you guys found a way to pull it out. What made the difference in the end? And Shaq completely ignored the question. And he said, if David Stern wants to ruin this league, then he'll keep bringing these effing refs out to officiate these games, as he said the word.
Uh-huh.
And I grabbed him by the elbow. I said, Shaq, you're on live. I said, we're on live. And he said, I don't give a blank. And so swore on live TV twice. I thought our producer was a woman named Sue Stratton, who was Chick's producer for 30 years. I'm earpiece in my ear. She screamed in my ear. I thought, oh boy, this is the end of my career. I'm getting suspended. Shaq's getting suspended. And matter of fact, if you guys go on YouTube and you just type in into the search window, Shaq swears, this whole thing will come up. It's only about 20 seconds. You can watch the whole thing.
John, I watched this clip probably 30 or 40 times with my friends when we
okay,
were in high
you
school.
Know, so you we're, know we're, exactly, we're, you know,
yeah.
Exactly what I'm talking about. So, but here's the weird end of the story. So, Shaq did get suspended for the next game. We were playing in Indiana, and you know, Shaq made so much money, it cost him a fortune. And I got a call from my boss, and she said, you're going to get called by the FCC. We're going to receive a very large fine, probably a fine for each instance where he swore. So just tell the truth, don't lie, and we'll sort it all out. As it turns out, we did not get fined a penny. Zero. And it's because of something that happened later that day. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
I can't think of it, no.
No.
Janet Jackson and
oh
Justin Timberlake. Remember? Timberlake at the Super Bowl pulled her top off?
Yep, wardrobe malfunction.
And so since I worked for CBS KCAL, CBS aired that Super Bowl, and they fined us for that instead. They let the Shaq stuff go, and they fined us for the nudity on Justin Timberlake, Janet Jackson, and I got off the hook. But that was one of the weirdest days of my life.
That's incredible. So, I mean, I guess you had some sympathy then for J.A. Adande when D'Angelo Russell said that he played, like, stuff.
Yeah, I actually talked to J.A. right after that, and I laughed, but... But Shaq to me, and I told people this all the time. I did a podcast over at Lakers.com when Shaq went into the Hall of Fame. Shaq to me married the business of sports and entertainment better than any athlete in the history of sports.
The closest thing
to it is probably Charles Barkley. But Shaq understood that it was not just basketball; it was entertainment, and he played to the crowd, he played to the media, he played to the kids. He took advantage of his fame by doing raps and movies and TV shows, and he had a really good time with it. And he, besides being one of the most dominant players ever in the NBA, he was a perfect marriage of Dr. Buss and the Lakers with Shaq. Because Dr. Buss's vision was always, look, it's not just a basketball game. We're going to put fans on the court in courtside seats. The NBA said, don't do it. He did it anyway. He says, I'm going to put dancing girls in really tight outfits on the court. The NBA said, you can't do it. He did it anyway. Now everybody does it. The NBA is an entertainment league. The Lakers have been the leader in NBA entertainment, and Shaq was the perfect match to play for the Lakers. That was just a really fun time to be there.
Well, this has been really fun, so we don't want to take too much. We could talk to you literally all day.
Have me back in the middle of the season, guys. Now you got my contact info. I'd be happy to come on anytime.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, John. We really appreciate it. And yeah, we look forward to listening to your calls, and hopefully nobody cusses on air with you for the foreseeable future.
from your lips to God's ears. Anthony Harrison, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, John. It was great talking to you.
So that was John Ireland, just a great guest, so much knowledge, so much background around the Lakers. He's been in the LA area for as long as I can honestly remember. I don't know of the Lakers without John Ireland being involved.
Less knowledgeable and with less background information was our fact-checking for our questions. So, Anthony, I'm just going to go ahead and say to our viewers, I mean, did somebody tell you to fact check maybe that John Ireland was stepping into Chick Hearn's shoes there?
No, I mean, I knew Spiro was before John, and then I had no idea that there was like Paul Sutherland before him, and then Joel Myers before after that. Yeah, our stat or our fact checking group is basically Callie, my dog. And she just dropped the bone on this one.
Well, yeah, I mean, we told her to double check Wikipedia, so that's that's our apologies again. John was great, and mm-hmm. he couldn't have been more gracious about it. But I feel like I should also allow you to have a chance to make fun of me.
I have to make fun of you?
Well, I did mistakenly say that it was his radio call that, of D'Angelo Russell's game winner, and it was actually TV, so...
Yeah, that's way worse.
Is that worse? I was at the arena, so I don't know if that's worse, but I was at least going to give you a chance to razz me for it, but that didn't quite go how I expected.
Basically, our fact-checking group is Callie, and she drives us barking mad.
You just wanted to record an outro just to make dog puns.
I mean, life can be rough sometimes.
Okay, so you can find other shows that have less dog puns, I would hope, on iTunes, Silver Screen Roll, Stitcher.
Tune in.
And today's Fast Break.
This is why that's usually my job, everybody.
I just didn't want to let you talk anymore. I thought you were going to, like today's, like, rough Fast Break or something. Like, you were going to try and work Fast Bark.
No, nothing like that.
I thought you were going to
I was just
going to
say, sometimes my jokes give people pause, but that was about it.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and end this podcast. If you enjoy them, please leave a review on iTunes. If you want to call us out for sarcasm, I guess also leave a review on iTunes.
It's been popular.
But we feel like most of you enjoyed the sarcasm, so sorry not sorry.
And before we sign off, make sure everybody's using the promo code LO Lakers. This show is brought to you by SeatGeek, so thank you very much to SeatGeek for the support that they've given us since we've made this agreement. It's been great.
Again, Lakers preseason coming up. Use that promo code to get your tickets. Anthony and I might be at a couple games. You can come track us down and hang out. Or you can at least hang out with Anthony. I'll volunteer him.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're going to be covering the game, and I get to drink while I'm at that game.
It's a weird relationship we have.
It's a great relationship. I get to reap the rewards. All right. Again, that was John Ireland on the show. This was a lot of fun. I hope everybody enjoyed the show. He said we're holding him to it. He's a recurring guest now. Yeah, he's basically going to be a co-host.
Essentially, like a co-host that comes on every once in a while.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Thank you, John.
We'll talk to everybody later.
Thanks, Anthony.
Shout out to Eddie Jones.